Welcome to this version of the FX podcast. I'm John Pryor, pleased to be joined by George Brown from our economics team and Chris Brown from our trading desk. It's been a little while since I've joined the call, so it's good to be back. And obviously, a lot's happened since I was last on. Just opening up in terms of client activity, we've been very busy, probably unsurprisingly, by the appreciation in sterling. So we've seen a lot of appetite and activity from importers in particular. I think the almost like the backdoor rally that sterling's had as risk has lifted and general risk appetite has improved somewhat, I think has been somewhat of an opportunity for importers to come back in and either top up what they need to do or probably fill in what they haven't done when the likes of sterling dollar was closer to 120 and sterling euro was sub 110. I think what we're finding now is that for a lot of those clients that have done what they needed to do, I think they're in a real quandary now as to how much of next year do they consider hedging, because they've got the short-term horizon risk of the Brexit deal and the transition and what's going to happen there. We're also hearing a lot that there is still so much uncertainty around what the trajectory of UK economic data is going to be. So that's a really difficult position for corporates, because, you know, the pound is going to have some major headwinds in the next 3 to 6 months. But when you look at the medium term horizon, to the point where a lot of our clients are actually going to be layering in hedging for, there is general sentiment that conditions should be improved. So I think for the importer, there is some, you know, there's some really difficult calls to be made. The flip side of that is that for the exporter, the sense would be at the moment for a lot where hedge ratios are where they need to be, it's more of a case of sitting and waiting with the belief that because of the transition deal, we're still going to see sterling a little bit lower. So there's still a lot going on. I think, believe it or not, even as we come out of COVID, feels like there's more uncertainty than ever. But it's just that uncertainty has evolved from the initial stages of the pandemic now through to the uncertainty of what will the economic consequences be, which only time is going to tell in the next few months and probably years. And then also with the tensions flicking back to UK-EU negotiations and the transition deal. So I think to elaborate on that, pleased to play in, George. And George, it'd be great to get yours and the team's thoughts about everything that's going on from an economic perspective.
Great, thank you. So I think the past fortnight has been pretty busy, I guess particularly on the domestic front. So the highlight has been the Chancellor's plan for jobs last Wednesday, and that included a further stimulus of up to 30 billion sterling in an effort to try and shore up the UK labour market. And I guess the flagship announcement from that was that there'll be a jobs retention bonus for businesses that are retaining furloughed staff through to the end of January. That's going to be paid at £1,000 per employee. But you also had a number of other key measures, such as a 6-month reduction in the VAT paid by the tourism and hospitality sector, as well as an increase in the threshold at which stamp duty is paid on residential properties. And this has all been billed as the kind of second stage in the government's 3-phase economic response. And the final act is going to come in the form of the autumn budget and a spending review. And that might be the point at which Mr. Sunak, the Chancellor, begins to try and put the public finances back on a sustainable path. There's a few nods to that in the speech. And indeed, this week, he's launched a review into the capital gains tax system. But of course, this all depends on how the economy fares up over the coming months. Things like you were mentioning, JP, there's a lot of uncertainty, not just in terms of the near-term outlook, but in terms of the medium-term outlook. And those two are kind of intertwined. And so if indeed Mr. Sunak wants to put the public finances on a sustainable path, the economy will have to be on firmly on the road to recovery at that point. And I guess on that front, you know, we had GDP figures recently for the month of May that showed that output had seen just a modest rebound of 1.8% over the month. And that followed output having plummeted 20.3% in April and 6.9% in March. And that was somewhat disappointing. The city had expected a more modest rise over the month. But that being said, we are anticipating more buoyant growth across June and July. Obviously, you had the reopening of non-essential retail as well as more recently, the hospitality and leisure sectors beginning to reopen. But the key question really is whether this can be sustained beyond the summer. The balance of risks are certainly tilted towards a flatter rebound, and that's not least because of the possibility of a severe second wave, which of course will bring with it a reimposition of lockdowns or restrictions across the economy. And already we've seen Leicester ordered back into a lockdown in recent weeks, and Blackburn has tightened its controls in an effort to avoid a similar fate. But broadly, it appears that we've managed to suppress the virus for the time being. That's really in contrast to the global picture. So a particular cause for concern is the US. Cases are still rising at an alarming pace, particularly in the southern and western states. And that's seen the likes of Florida, Texas, and California reimpose restrictions. And likewise, Australia, Hong Kong, South Africa, they've all seen a recent resurgence in infections, and they've had to implement measures to try and contain the spread. Whilst all this is going on, Brazil and India have really yet to bring the virus under control. They've never really arrested it in the first place. And so, you know, the result of all these factors is that if you look at the number of daily cases, they're still rising about 200,000 each day. And the total number of infected worldwide is now about 40 million. So huge risks, obviously, bimodal, you know, to both sides in terms of the virus, but certainly from our perspective, we'd still see them as being tilted to the downside and more so than 2 weeks ago when we last did this podcast. But away from the pandemic, there's been a whole host of other developments popping up on the risk radar. So, for instance, there's been growing tensions between China and the West over a range of issues. But in particular, the new national security law has been a particular bone of contention. There's been some criticism that it's undermining Hong Kong's independence. But also the US has threatened to impose tariffs on $2.4 billion worth of French goods. That's in response to its digital services tax. And that could well spiral into a tit-for-tat trade dispute between the US and the EU. But from a domestic perspective, the most significant risk, aside from the pandemic, obviously remains the continued stalemate in post-Brexit trade negotiations between the UK and the EU. And that's particularly after 10 Downing Street rejected last month an extension to the transition period, and it's actually launched now a new public information campaign to try and prepare the country for it ending on the 31st of December. Now, in terms of the talks, we're in what the two sides are calling the discussions phase, and that's been billed as a period of intensified negotiations aimed at reaching agreement on the underlying principles of a deal. Now, although that's been the intention, we haven't really seen much progress so far. But, you know, the two sides are still optimistic. They're hoping that they'll be able to yield results in the next round of formal talks, which are in London next week. But, you know, we're not really expecting much from the Investec Economics desk. And it's been our view now for some time that we're not really going to see any material progress over the coming months. But instead, what you'll do is you'll get a last minute sort of agreement between the two sides, which has often been the case, actually, in recent years. In terms of the Brexit negotiations and the former Prime Minister Theresa May, and indeed late last year ahead of the election with Boris Johnson. But for the meantime, obviously the risk of a sharp dislocation in the UK-EU trading relationship at the end of the year, that's going to come possibly into greater focus over the coming months, and that could well weigh on sterling risk sentiment. So that's where we stand broadly on a kind of economic perspective.
George, thanks very much. Yeah, I mean, I think that what I hear there, and certainly what we're speaking to customers around, is just that risk outlook at the moment. And what strikes me is that sterling is probably managing to go relatively unscathed by the slightly jolting, inconsistent risk environment. But Chris, it'd be good to get your thoughts about what are you seeing from a flow and a trading perspective, and general thoughts about what do you think sterling's value is going to do in the next few weeks?
Yes, I mean, sterling dollar's trading in basically a 200-point range since we last spoke a couple of weeks ago. Been up to a high of 126.69. And this is despite some of the weaker data points that we're seeing in the UK domestically, such as the GDP that George mentioned. But we also have the jobs data that was out today, So it's a little bit sideways trading against the dollar. But what we have been seeing, one of the reasons why I see it a bit sideways is despite these sort of weak domestic data points, we're seeing some risk on moves, especially with the announcement of the Oxford drugs trial, which seems to be doing very well. It's looking at a twin effect of both antibodies and T cells, and the market took that quite well, so we saw a bit of a risk on. So that's one of the reasons why we're seeing this sideways price action in sterling against the dollar. So it's pretty hard to play this sterling weakness against the dollar. So I think maybe a better way to look at it is against the euro. What we've seen actually is sterling euro is down almost 2% from the highs of 111.88. I think we could see that pushing further towards the downside over the next few weeks. One thing to bear in mind in terms of the sterling euro is also you've got the euro summit this weekend. And a lot of the focus on that is going to be about the EU recovery fund. I think if we see an agreement on that, then we're going to see some euro strength. So on sterling euro, you're going to get the twin effect of sterling weakness and euro strength. I think if we see that, then we can see the sterling euro push quite a bit lower. So we've got some support at 109 and 108. I think they will be in danger of being taken out. And then we could actually focus on the, I think it's the March low around the 105.25 region. So I think if I'm going to play sterling weakness, it will definitely be via sterling euro rather than against the dollar.
Thanks very much, Chris. Yeah, I think it just all of that exposes that it's still such a vulnerable environment for our clients, particularly those that, you know, importing and reliant on sterling, sterling holding its value or appreciating. So a lot still going on. We'll certainly be back in a couple of weeks. But in the meantime, if there is any questions or you need anything from us, you know where we are. We'd love to chat and we'll look forward to catching up soon.